programming on ACB Radio is made possible in part through financial support from the Verizon Corporation. Verizon, a proud supporter of ACB Radio.
We are the American Council of the Blind. We are blind and visually impaired men and women who come from every community within our country. We are tall, short, old, and young. Some of us are athletes, and some of us are couch potatoes, while most of us fall somewhere in between. Some of us who received quality education and sound training are working successfully in virtually every profession. Psychologists, auto mechanics, administrators, computer analysts, cooks, and engineers. We are the American Council of the Blind, working to ensure the right to opportunity for education, training, employment, and a meaningful life for all Americans, including those of us who are blind or who have a significant vision loss. For more information, call 800-424-8666 or contact us online at www.acb.org. The American Council of the Blind, forging new frontiers for our future.
This program is brought to you by The Seeing Eye, celebrating 75 years of independence and dignity. The Seeing Eye proudly serves people in North America with specially bred and trained seeing eye dogs. Visit our website, www.seeingeye.org.
For the blind, by the blind, ACB Radio.
Everybody. Well, we hope you've enjoyed your dinner. We are live on the air on ACB Radio. My engineer this evening is the incomparable Mr. Jonathan Mosen. And as I mentioned, we're live from Pittsburgh. The 2003 annual convention, the 42nd annual convention of the American Council of the Blind. And we have a lot to do tonight, and you're all going to be glad you came. I want to tell you, you're going to be glad that you came. Gene has given over tonight the responsibilities to a man who knows how to give away a door. Will you please help me welcome Mr. Door Prize, P. Edwards. How you doing, P?
I'm doing well, Jay, and I want to tell you that dinner got me all artichoked up.
I'm glad you said it.
As a matter of fact, it caused me to caper in circles. Do the chicken scratch. And the mashed potato.
What about the beans?
I'm still jumping.
All right.
So I have the door prize to give away.
That's good.
I'm very happy to tell you. And shall I give you a kind of a clue about what sort of a prize it is? Shall I?
Yes, I think you should do that.
I think I should.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very pretty bag it is.
And the winner
is...
Do the cracker again, will you?
Body want a cracker.
Thank you. Elaine Vining.
Oh, I know her.
I know her, too.
That's excellent.
Is she here?
Is she here?
From the great state of Minnesota.
Not here.
Oh.
Let's do the next one. Let's do this.
We're drawing another name now, ladies and gentlemen. The suspense is mounting.
Okay.
By the time we have finished this evening, we will have given away a voicemaid from Parrot.
The next name is Sandra Isaac.
Sandra Isaac.
Not here.
Well, that's just as well, because you don't want to give something away to a person who has a girl's name and a boy's name.
The next name is Wayne Thompson.
Wayne Thompson. Not here.
I guess Polly doesn't want a cracker.
The next name is Bill Lewis.
Bill Lewis from the state of Georgia. Is Bill here?
That's Jack.
That's Jack. Oh, well.
Bill's from Kansas.
Bill's from Kansas. Is Bill here?
Yeah, you know what? People ought to stay and they can see what they get. Jim?
Not here. I'm told he's not here. Michael Byington is.
Here's Jim Jarrett.
Jim Jarrett.
From the left. Again,
Jim Jarrett
Jim is here. All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, the voice made from Parrot, and thank you to Parrot for the donation. And now, I give you back to the king of Pennsylvania swing, Mr. Jay Doudna.
It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. Okay, we're going to do some more door prizes now. And you got the bag. We have three more to give, and then it's time for our first set of speakers this evening. All right. So.
Pam, what are we giving away?
Okay, Miss Pam. Miss Pam has become the door prize queen. What is the first one?
$25 from Alaska Independent Blind plus a mystery gift.
A mystery gift, and that is going to?
Janice Reville, St. Petersburg, Florida.
Janice Reville? Is she here? Congratulations, Janice.
Cynthia
is our door prize runner this evening. Wish I could do that horse routine. Okay, what's next?
$25 from RSVA, Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America.
If you don't get this one, you claim it on the father.
$25 from RSVA. Father Gary's picking out the ticket. There you go.
Okay, and that name is Jack Kenley from, Phoenix City, Alabama.
Jack Kenley from Phoenix City, Alabama. Sweet home Alabama.
Okay. Joanne Burkovic.
Joanne Burkovic from Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, PA. Is she here? She's not here? Okay.
We got another one to draw? People just don't want money. They give it to me. Beverly Gustafson.
Betty Gustafson. Keep going. I'm keeping them out this time. We're not throwing them back.
Edward Rays from Kansas City, Missouri.
Edward Rays from Kansas City. Is he here?
Is he here?
No, I think he just has a fan club.
Shirley Hutspeth.
Shirley Hutspeth. Are you here? From Virginia Beach? She's out on the beach.
Must be nice. All right. Fred, you can read that last name.
I can't read it.
All right. Fred, S-C-H-R, Segrist.
Fred Schweigert? Fred Schweigert from Virginia? He's in Florida now?
Yeah, and Janetti Schomeyer.
Janetti Schomeyer?
Hey, look, we're doing the best we can do. You took that one. All right, Gerald Holt.
Gerald Holt. Jeanette's here? Great. Okay. We have one more and then we're going to get going.
$50 from Alaska Independent Blind.
$50.
I hope I can draw money.
From the Alaska Independent Blind.
Maurice Richardson from Richmond, Virginia.
Maurice Richardson from Richmond, Virginia.
Cynthia Towers.
Cynthia Towers, Seattle, Washington. I just saw her curtsy. She's over here complaining about she didn't get her prize yet. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have a lot more coming up tonight and next on the program. Is a special award that's going to be presented this evening. And I'd like those people to make their way up here to the front of the stage right now, because we have not only a special award, but then a special program coming up in just a little bit. And you won't want to go away, because we will also have more door prizes, and we also have the sweepstakes to present in just a little while. And that sweepstakes winner will be coming up at the end of tonight's banquet. Oh, my God.
So we stand here, right?
You stand here. Bud goes up.
Bud goes up.
Well, we have a bit of a break in proceedings here, so... This is Jonathan Rosen speaking live from the banquet, saying sometimes... Oh, here we go. He's back.
Great deal of pleasure to introduce our next speaker, who is going to introduce the next part of this program. Now, I want to tell you, I'm very, very excited to be a part of this tonight. And I think when you hear this next segment, you're going to be more than glad that you came to this 42nd annual banquet of the American Council of the Blind. Here is a man from the Washington, D.C. area who's been active in the ACB for a long time, one of my good buddies. Will you please help me welcome Mr. Bud Keith?
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Chris Gray and Teddy Joy Remhild for letting us do one of these award presentations a little bit differently. I feel privileged because I nominated the person who's going to receive the Derwood K. McDaniel Ambassador Award. When I first became blind at age 11, my mother had heard about a young man who had started to make a name for himself. And as I grew up, this man was kind of a role model, because in his early 20s he had already established himself as a well-known name in the Washington, D.C. community. And I hope you'll understand the confusion of someone who is 18 years old. But when I had to pick my career, this man was the only blind man that I knew who wasn't working in the blindness biz. And I kind of wanted to do something different. Well, I followed his trail. I found I didn't have either the talent or the ambition to do what he did. But tonight I would like to now introduce his good friend who helped him get started. And ladies and gentlemen, I introduce to you Mr. Weatherman, one of the nicest people in the United States, Willard Scott.
Thank you. What a nice, can you hear me? Thank you so much. You all are so sweet, and I'm delighted to be here. But somebody ate my chihuahua. Is anybody in the room here? One of your dogs ate Quiero Taco Bell. I wish you'd try to find him before the evening's over. I cannot tell you how lovely it is for me to be here representing Smuckers, because I see a couple of you in this room tonight that I think probably will be on my strawberry jar on the show in a couple of weeks. I'm supposed to be more serious, of course, because this is a serious award. But how do you... I mean, this is my friend. You know Eddie Walker. Let's hear it for Uncle Eddie right here. Most of you don't know it, but Eddie is commonly known as Junie. That was his mother's name for him, Junie. And his mother... You all right, Eddie? Can you handle that?
I can handle
there
it.
There you go. His mother used to tell me that when he was... listening to the radio, that he would pick up a bell and ring it when the National Barn Dance was on. And he was 27 years old then. And but he knew when he... Actually, you were just a little baby, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
What did you say? What did they say in the National Barn Dance?
Well, what the...
Did they say something?
You got to talk right into it.
Oh, talk right into it.
The first... my mother said the first thing she put in my baby book was turn the radio on. I don't know what they said on the National Barn Dance, but I would sit in the rocking chair and ring that bell and they'd applaud. The old National Barn Dance with Joe Kelly.
So, I mean, that's a long time ago. Most of you don't remember.
That's before radio was invented.
That's right. As most of the people we know in broadcasting now are either in that big radio station in the sky or out of work. And I'm slowly, one foot of me is in each of those careers at this point. But I really got to tell you, it followed suit that the first time I met this man, I was in just out of high school, and I guess it was 1951, wasn't it?
Yep.
And a friend of ours took me over to WAMU and radio. Eddie started that station. Eddie and Roger Gordon and Dave Taper, right?
Right.
Three guys. And I mention this because, see, Eddie then, and this is part of what this award's about, Eddie then was working basically in a sighted world. He was working at a radio station, and there was no other folks there that were not sighted, right?
That's right.
And the fact that there was a nude modeling school right next to the station... always made me wonder if Eddie really was blind.
I missed out on an awful lot there. You know, these guys would tell me things, and, you know, the advantages of sight are pretty good sometimes.
You probably think this is a stupid ad lib, but this is all true stuff I'm giving you. But then Eddie was on the air. Where are you going?
Somebody leaving?
And she's leaving.
She won her prize, and now she's leaving.
Hey, listen, it gets better than this. We're a little hotter than that. Stick around. It'll get hotter than that. Anyway, Eddie was talking on the radio at the time, doing his little radio show, and Roger, my friend, said, slip across the table and have a seat in a chair across the microphone. So the very first words that Eddie and I ever spoke were over a microphone.
True.
Huh?
That's true.
That's true. I said that. You don't have to add that to it. I mean, that doesn't add a whole lot to it.
You've been hogging the microphone for 50 years,
yeah,
you know?
I'm supposed to present the award. If you were going to present me an award, you could hog the microphone.
Oh, okay.
But that was 1951, and the point of my boring story was, this is 2003, and we are still together as a team. And I think that's pretty darn good. And hello there. Everybody told me for years that Eddie's only handicap was working with me. If he hadn't have done that, he would have probably been a bigger star than he is now.
I got my own mic now.
Oh, God. There goes my act. I can't say anything anymore. But we have had so much fun working as a team, and most of you knew, I hope, that we were called the Joy Boys. And we... Now, I don't want to encourage anything, but who would like to hear us sing the Joy Boys theme song?
Do you remember that?
There will be a dry eye in the house after this, right. Or maybe something else. Let's give him a shot, shall we? Ready?
Right.
One, two, three. We are the Joy Boys of radio. We chase electrons to and fro. We are the Joy Boys of radio. We chase electrons to and fro.
Thank you. And we have a website. by the way. I want to tell you about, we had a plug-in for our Joy Boys website, which is very accessible with talking screen readers. But you got to put the ahead of Joy Boys. It's thejoyboys.com. If you don't put the in it, it's a pornographic site. I just thought I'd say.
And I got to admit, it's a lot more entertaining than the Joy Boys. So. But over the years, the interesting thing to me was that Eddie and I, as a team in Washington at WRC, had the most wonderful, loyal following. And Eddie, I may cry when I say this, but Eddie really did inspire all of us, including me. I learned humility with Eddie Walker, and I mean that, which prepared me for better things and bigger. Some of them were better. Everywhere we went, nobody paid any attention to me. Eddie would walk in, Eddie, let me get you some roast beef. Eddie, let me get you a drink. Eddie, let me take your coat. I was still out in the car, and nobody said a word. But because of that, I learned to work with Brian Gumbel and survive 4 years in Dallas. No, but the truth is, it really was a wonderful experience for him, of course, to work at a broadcasting station where nobody else was blind. He was the only person. And all of the people at that station. My point of this boring story is it's a two-way street. And I don't want any blind person to ever think for 1 second that they couldn't be qualified or couldn't do anything that they wanted to do because of this. Yeah, sorry, let's hear it now.
Yeah, right.
Now, that's known a little bit as sucking up to you people. I know that when I say that. Hey, you like that, baby. No, but the truth is, it is a two-way street, and everybody learns and everybody benefits. And I think you're living proof of that after what? I don't want to tell them how old you are, but it's been a long time, as we say, long of tooth. Many moon come over Choctaw when great waters
That's
march.
Right, Chief. Well,
he's gone from Pampers to Depends, I'll tell you that.
Is complete.
Shut up. Let me do it. Oh. Anytime he sneezes when he's around you, get out of the way. I don't want to. All right. Is that okay? Are we all right,
Bud? All right.
Bud, shut up. I haven't finished yet. I'm going to read the award. I don't care whether you hold the award. It's a lovely award.
Here. I'm holding it.
You know, the awful thing is, all these years, I've never learned Braille. Isn't that terrible? So,
one of these days.
Yeah, all right. Now, let me read it first. All right. All right. Says the, I'll read the Braille here. They won't know that.
They won't know the difference.
Because it's written on front here. But can I do this all right? It's left to right, isn't it?
Yes.
Thank you. The American Council of the Blind Derwood K. McDaniel Ambassador Award is presented to Eddie Walker, who, by his life work, association, and activities, has promoted integration into and interaction with the life of the community. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, July the 11th, 2003. We salute you, Ed Walker. You're my friend, and I love you.
I, you too. Ooh.
Here, here.
Ooh. 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 Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much.
I need the other one.
Huh? He's talking into it. You want the microphone?
Switch mic.
You want to switch mic?
The microphone. There you go. You want us to sit down?
Yeah.
I want
to accept the award. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I think every one of us could use a friend like Willard.
Thank you.
That's right. I'd just like to say, I want to accept this with great humility. I knew Durward McDaniel. I know what he stood for. I know his dedication to the American Council of the Blind and what he thought about equality for blind people in industry. And I can't think of anybody that I'd rather have than Willard present it to me. And I'm very serious now. I love this guy. He's like a brother to me. And we have worked together for 50 years through thick and thin. And thick. I love
it. So
him.
Beautiful. And here's your watch back. I couldn't do this.
But I must say that there are people in this room who are as talented or probably more talented than I. But I was fortunate enough to have breaks from people like Willard. No man is an island. You don't do it by yourself. It's people having faith in you and trust and helping you along. And that's the kind of guy Willard has been, and we've had a wonderful ride together, and I hope it continues for a long time. Thank you again very much.
Here. Yeah. Is that all right?
We
I've got. Yeah. And the only technology that Ed took with him into school was a slate, a stylus, and a white cane. We have one little addition. The Public Relations Committee has been working for a long time on putting together some high-class public service announcements. And just this year, Willard offered to do some PSAs for us. And if the miracle of our usual technology works, if you're quiet, I think we can play one for you just now.
Hey, this is Willard Scott for the American Council of the Blind. When you were a kid, did you ever try to pretend to be blind? Well, I did. But for 9 million Americans, being blind is not pretend at all. If you've got low vision and know someone who's blind, call the American Council of the Blind in Washington, D.C. and get answers about living with low vision and blindness. Call the American Council of the Blind, toll-free 1-800-424-8666. Or visit the website, www.acb.org.
Okay, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That's the presentation.
I want to tell you, it really is a great night for me because I got the chance to meet a man that I admired for a long time. In fact, he probably doesn't remember this, but when I was a junior at Overbrook, the School for the Blind, I came to Washington, and Willard and Ed were doing the show over at WRC, and I went in there to watch them do that show for a while. And Willard, I think, or Ed, I think you just had a, didn't you have some sort of Braille clock or something? What was it when you did that show? How many different kinds of things did you have in the studio that actually helped you do the thing? Well, how many things did you do? Did you Braille carts?
Willard, for one. Now, we had a board operator. We didn't have engineers.
That's what I remember. Yeah, right.
We had a board operator, and we had a sound effects door. We had a door made, which was sort of a punctuation mark on radio when characters would come in and leave, and so long, Mr. Scott, boom, the door would close. And I had the Braille clock.
That's what I remember. I took that out. Besides the way you used to do things, I had that memory of from when I was at Overbrook and came to see
Willard,
you do it.
Willard didn't like the fact that I had the lamp on my side of the table. Tell that. He worked with me.
It was funny because normally the disc jockey would sit at the head of the table, and he had this wonderful lamp so he could read all the copy and see everything. And Eddie sat there and controlled the show because he and the engineer did that, basically together better. Can't have three cooks spoil abroad. But I'm sitting at the other end of the desk, and I'm the one that sees. I didn't have a lamp to read the copy. I didn't have any light. So basically, I did the show in the dark for 30 years, and it ran on RC. I think if we'd had light, we might still be on the air.
Well, you know, it is really amazing. A lot of the time, I know you worked with scripts a lot. You did some things that scripts. But there were times when you really just sort of did a lot of ad-libbing, too, weren't there?
Oh, absolutely. The show, 90% was, was ad-lib. We had a thing called As the Worm Turns, which was a soap opera. Remember that?
Can you remember any of it and do a couple of lines from it?
It was brought to you by Scuff
No More.
Scuff No More, which took care of childbirth, anything that was a problem. And the point is, we would take one word like bedpan, and we used that for the whole week. And the whole idea was bedpan, room 12, bedpan, room 13. And every day people thought somebody needed a bedpan in room 12, right?
That's right.
And the punchline was,
hello, I'm Dr. Ernst Bedpan. Somebody's paging me. What is it?
There was a doctor bedpan.
Oh, it was like that all the time on the radio. Can you imagine that happening every day for how many years?
A long
time. Almost 20. That's why they put us on at night, so the management wouldn't have to listen.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, listen, we want to thank you, Willard, for coming out to Pittsburgh today. And Ed, congratulations to you in memory of a wonderful man, Derwood McDaniel. And it's really a pleasure to be with you again. And thank you, Willard.
One more quick thing was Eddie's father. Oh, I will weep about this. His father was the most loyal, wonderful man. He drove Eddie down to that station and took care of him, and he was just, God love him. I'll never forget the dedication and love of Ed's dad to helping Ed's career at WRC, and I know you will concur.
Right? Good, speak to that.
I have been so blessed with first my parents and then with Willard and then a wife and kids that understood what I was doing all my life. I thank the good Lord for all of his blessings.
Thank you. I guess you have shut up.
I'll tell you, we could probably go on with them for a long time. And if you want to, maybe we could prevail on them after we, just before we wrap up, to do, why don't you think about this, Willard and Ed, you think about this and do a little bit for us right at the end, to kind of, right as soon as we do the sweepstakes, you could take us out with a short little bit. We'll plan for that. But right now, I'd like to introduce a woman from Texas. See, all I have to do here is come up here and introduce everybody else, and then they do all the work for me. So even if I didn't find out I was going to do this till yesterday afternoon, it was okay because I didn't have to do much. I'd like to now introduce Judy Jackson. Judy is a member of the Texas Council of the Blind. She's a member of NABS. She's right now still going to school, studying to be a court reporter. And I think, Judy, as I recall, you're going to be, if not the first, one of the first visually impaired court reporters. Is that right?
One of the first. There's actually one practicing.
There's one practicing in the country now, but you're probably going to be, there's not too many of them, right?
No,
there's not. Yeah, I didn't think so.
I hope to be the first in Texas.
She hopes to be the first in Texas, so she's got to get through that first. But, ladies and gentlemen, she's going to introduce the next part of this program, and I'll be back because we will bring Willard back because we do have sweepstakes and a few doors to give away yet. So don't go away. Right now, here's Judy Jackson.
Good evening. It gives me great pleasure to introduce to you some fast-coming friends of mine, Wes and Kim Smith. Kim Smith is herself deaf and blind. She was deaf first, lost vision later, born deaf, right? Yes, born deaf as a result of Usher syndrome, and later lost her vision. I have to tell you all a quick funny story. When she was pretty young, she met Wes because Wes was working at one of the USA Relay things, Relay Texas, I think, and she had happened to call, and she and Wes started talking back and forth, and she told Wes that she wore glasses, just a little slight, and Wes said, oh, no big deal, I wear glasses too. And so that wasn't a big deal. And then come to find out, she had a little more vision loss than just wearing glasses. She, in fact, was visually impaired, but Wes didn't know that. And Kim thought, this is somebody I want to capture, so I better just tell him I just have a slight vision loss. And Kim is a graduate of the University of Texas with a degree in general ed. And then she went on and got her degree in acting from the National Theater for the Deaf. And you will find that she uses that quite well in what they have to say. Wes will be her voice, but the words that he will be saying to you will be the words of Kim. So without further ado, may I introduce to you Kim and Wes Smith.
thank you. Thank you so much, Judy, for introducing me and for introducing the two of us. First, I want to apologize for the masculine voice that I have. I'm really a rather thin-looking young lady, but this is my husband. He'll be speaking for me, and the two of us will be going back and forth, and he'll try to identify who's speaking when we're talking. I know that y'all have been listening to speakers and going through workshops, and you're at the culmination at the end, and I'm hoping that I'm not going to bore you too much, so I'm going to try to keep it kind of quick and tell you some stories instead. I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself first. I was born premature, and I was born totally deaf. At the age of 3 is when I started in on speech and hearing, and I was diagnosed with Usher's syndrome and retinitis pigmentosa and started in the school for the deaf at the age of 11. I was very active. I was in track. I was a cheerleader. I was in Big Sister, Little Sisters, and Explorers. I was in Girl Scouts. Very much so active and involved. I graduated and attended several colleges. I went to Southwest Collegiate Institute for the Deaf in Big Springs, in West Texas. Went on to St. Philip's College in San Antonio. Went to different colleges, as Judy had mentioned. Went to UT, the University of Texas. After that, I started working, and I worked at San Antonio Independent Living Services, sales, and I worked with client cases on the computer. Somehow, during all of this, my eyes were getting worse, and I ended up calling in the Texas Commission for the Blind, and I have to say, without the Commission for the Blind, I probably wouldn't be standing here before y'all serving as a role model or telling anybody anything positive. I'd probably be pretty isolated. So I'm very thankful for the Commission for the Blind for being so supportive and all the stuff that people do to get us out there and get us trained. I went to Chris Cole Rehab Center, where I got independent living training, communication skills training, learned how to cook and how all my mobility was going to work, being totally blind and totally deaf. Went back to college and found myself extremely frustrated because of no Braille and having to depend on interpreters to translate any verbal or printed material. And I remember the first semester of college, going through the whole semester, and on the very last day of school, during final exams, they brought in the Braille books. And they said, "Isn't this great? We got your books." So I said, "Yeah, isn't it great? You got my books. I'll be taking the class again next year." I transferred at that point. Started doing a lot of work in acting. I worked at a television network called Kaleidoscope Television, where I had my own television program called Kim's World. And it was a children's series that showcased my hobbies. And some of my hobbies would be, I would do snow skiing and horseback riding, scuba diving and skydiving. And then I would go through and teach an exercise that kids would need to know to be young and healthy. And then we would showcase an animal at the San Antonio Zoo, where the zookeeper would come in and each week it would be a different animal. Like, they'd take an elephant and stick my hand in the elephant's mouth, and take spiders and tarantulas and have them crawl up my arm, and snakes and armadillos. And I got to touch all of these wonderful animals and go through and explain those. And then I would do the story of a character, don the character clothing of a story, like Snow White, and I would do one kid's story for each of the show. That was very exciting. After that, I started doing more independent work. I have all of the equipment that gives me accessibility, the scanners, all of the Braille transcribers, everything that allows me to access the internet. I have the silent alert system so that I know, for me as a deafblind person, I'm alerted if somebody's at the door, if the telephone's ringing, if there's a noise, if the fire alarm is going off, or a baby's crying. And all of this is a tactile alert for me. I also have Braille captioning, but I have to use my Telebraille 2, which is a telephone that translates everything. The only problem with stuff like this is all of my devices work together, so if the phone rings, I have to disconnect the TV before I can talk on the telephone. Hearing people use Relay Texas, so I'm able to talk with hearing people through relay services. And as you know, as blind people, all of my kitchen is accessible to me. Currently what I do is me and my husband. My husband works as a sign language assessment coordinator for the state of Texas. And when he has downtime, the two of us schedule and travel and speak at different conferences. And I serve basically as a role model, like I'm doing tonight, and to show what can be done with your lives. I have two beautiful children. They are very wonderful. My daughter will be 7 next week on Wednesday, and my son is 5. Both of them have phenomenal communication skills. My daughter's sign language skills came very naturally. In fact, last spring, my daughter had asked me if I would teach her Braille. And I said, "Oh, hang on, we're busy, it's a big task." And my daughter waited, and having no patience, at the age of 6, she herself got the ABC card from her dad with the Braille, and on Mother's Day, went through and brailled my first Mother's Day card for me with the Perkins Brailler. So, yeah, thank y'all very much. I literally thought my husband did it. And my daughter was a little disappointed. She's like, no, I did that myself, Mom. So these are some really amazing and enlightening things that I'm enjoying with my children. They give me goosebumps. 6 years old, and she's learning Braille because I don't have time to teach her on her own. So I have great kids, and they're very actively involved with me and what I do and when we go out and speak. My daughter is in second grade, and she's reading at what they call a 4.3 reading level. So she's reading at a fourth grade, third month. So her language skills are doing great, even though we're signing and she's getting Braille and speech and everything. At the age of 3, I'll never forget, my daughter had gone next door to the next door neighbors. And her friend, the friend is a little bit older than her. She was over there at the neighbor's house and she was taking books out of the bookcase and saying that they were broke. And the friend comes over and says to her mother, Wes, you know, she says to the mother to tell Wes that my daughter's throwing books in her room. And we go in to see what's going on, very worried. And we're saying, why are you throwing books? And she says, these books are broke. There's something wrong with them. They can't be read. And she was rubbing her hand looking for Braille because all of our books in the house are Braille. So that was the first time we had to sit down and have the talk. Okay, Mama can't see, but you're going to be able to see. And Mama's going to use those Braille books, but you're not going to have all your books Brailled in school. So it's been a nice progression as we go along. My son is rather unique. He's more of a lazy signer. So his language isn't as quick. He'll start in kindergarten this fall, so I'm real thrilled about that. I guess I'll turn it over now to Wes. One of the things I wanted to say is that we do a lot of traveling, a lot of speaking, and it's hard for us at a convention where there's a lot of blind people, because when people can see, they know when Kim's signing and I'm talking for her and when I'm talking. So if I make the mistake of, and you're not sure who's talking, if y'all yell it out, I'll tell you who's talking at the time. But I want to just talk about, in general, some of the frustrations and some of the neat things that we've experienced with our kids. They tend to be, they probably think that everyone has deaf blindness in their family. Like, for example, and we don't have the book of answers. So if any of y'all have answers for us, please send them to us. We'll give you some email. But we were walking through the store when my daughter was 3 and my son was just a baby. And because Kim can't see and hear, if I have to go shopping, which I have to do all the shopping, then I think Kim and the kid should have to come with me, so we can all do suffer together. So we take all the kids with us, and at about 3, we're walking through the grocery store, and someone walks past, and my daughter says, Mama's deaf and blind. And she just announces this to the person. And like any good parent, I ignore it and go, oi. And I keep walking, and another person walks by, and she says, Mama's deaf and blind, and she lets them know. So I pull over, and I said to my daughter, honey, are you wearing panties? And she looks at me like I'm an idiot and says, yeah. And I said, well, do you tell everyone you're wearing panties? And she says, no. I said, well, it's kind of the same thing with Mama. I said, if someone asked you, would you tell them? She said, well, of course, yeah. I said, well, if someone asked you, you tell them. But if they don't ask, you don't have to tell them. And I thought, well, this is a good explanation. And then we get about to the chip aisle. And I start thinking, my daughter's going to be explaining in counseling how deaf blindness is like panties. So I'm not really sure how good we're doing. But from that point, it was all good to go. We had no problem until she started kindergarten. When my daughter started kindergarten, Kim and I sat down and had a talk. And one of the things that we were concerned about is that our daughter was going to be labeled as the kid with the deafblind mother. So we went back and forth and back, and we agreed that I would take her to school, and after about 2 or 3 weeks, when they had that first parent-teacher conference, that we'd show up together. And we thought that that'd give her a chance to have some identity without the stigmatism of us being her parents. And we thought that was a smart idea, because as stupid parents, we don't know. So about the first week, second week of school, my daughter, I pick her up from school, and I'm asking her how school's going, and she asked me if I wouldn't mind going and telling the teacher that she's not a liar. And I'm very upset. Well, why would the teacher think you're a liar? And she says, well, and she starts explaining. Sometime in the first couple of days, they were to do some homework, something at home, and they were supposed to have Mama go through it with them. So when she came back, I did it with her. When she came back, they asked, did Mama, you know, and she said, oh, no, Mama doesn't talk. Well, somewhere in the third, fourth, fifth day, it came out that Mama doesn't see. And then later on, Mama doesn't hear. And the teacher pulls her outside the class and talks about the difference between a truth and a lie and that you don't need to make up. So I said, well, did you tell her that Mama was deaf and blind? And she said, no. I said, why not? She never asked. So I got kicked in the butt with that one. And it's been a real learning experience. Our kids, the irony of the whole thing is that I was really concerned about her as an individual. And I said, you know, I'm so sorry, sweetheart. And she said, no, Dad, you know what's important is that this teacher knows when all those other kids come in and their mothers are deaf and blind, that they don't call him a liar. So I thought, in a couple of years, we're going to have the talk about Mama being unique. But at this point, she's thinking those other 50 kids in the other classes whose mamas are deaf and blind are going to need some support as well. I say that because the two of us in our house are freakishly normal. It's almost pathetic. It's when you walk outside that you have to deal with the stupid questions. The people who come up to our daughter. Now, because Kim is totally blind and totally deaf, when we sign, I don't use lip movement and I don't use facial expression because it's not necessary. It's a pointless addition to our conversation and actually deters from me focusing in on the sign and the structures that we would use. So if the kids are with us and Kim and I are signing, our kids will join in on the conversation in sign because that's the mode we're using. If the kids are talking to each other and I'm not signed to Kim, then they'll usually talk to me and not sign. So it just matches whatever mode we're using. And people will come up to our children, as many of you will know, and say things that are very stupid. They'll say things like, did you help your mommy and daddy? Well, yeah, they pay our mortgage. We have a society of people who are just very uneducated, and you have to chuckle at them. And Kim has a great attitude about it. She has a phenomenal attitude about how she deals with those people. I tend to be a little bit more short. I usually look back at them and say, well, do your children help you with that little small bus you rode to school? So we balance each other out very nicely. One second, we're having a discussion. Okay, I think now this is Kim talking. I'm going to tell you a short story because I don't want y'all sit there nodding off to sleep. I know how it gets at these conferences. So I'm going to tell you a story, and I'm going to tell you a couple. And these will be a story that you can go home and tell to your friends and your kids. And my story is called, make sure I don't run into anybody here. My story is called One Fine Day. One fine day, there's a fox with a big red snout, big ears, and a tail who notes a big jug of milk. And he runs over to the big jug of milk and he drinks it all the way down. And he says, that was delicious milk. And the woman whose milk it was grabs his tail, cuts it off, and puts it up on the shelf. And he says, please give me my tail. And the woman says, first you give me back my milk that you took, and I'll give you back your tail. And the fox says, okay. So the fox, he runs and he runs and he comes over to a cow. And he says, cow, if you give me some milk, I can take it to the woman who will give me back my tail, please. And the cow, chewing his cud, says, well, first you give me some grass. If you give me some grass, I'll let you have some milk. And the fox says, okay. So the fox, he runs and he runs and he comes over to the grass. He says, if you give me some grass, I can take the cow, take the milk from the cow, give it to the woman who will give back my tail, please. And the grass says, well, first you give me some water and I'll let you have some of my grass. And the fox says, okay. So the fox, he runs and he runs and he comes over to a stream and he says to the stream, if I can take some water, I can feed it to the grass, take the grass and feed it to the cow, take some milk from the cow and give it to the woman who will give back my tail, please. And the stream says, well, first you need to go get a jar. If you get a jar, I'll let you have the water. And the fox says, okay. So the fox, he runs and he runs. And he comes over to the little girl and says, little girl, can I have a jar? If you give me the jar, I can take it to the stream, take the stream for the water from the stream, take it to the grass, feed it to the, take the grass, feed it to the cow, take the milk from the cow and give it to the woman who'll give back my tail, please. And the little girl says, well, first you give me a blue bead. If you give me a blue bead, I'll let you have that jug. And he says, okay. So the fox, he runs and he runs and he comes over to the merchant. He says to the merchant, would you please give me a blue bead? If you give me a blue bead, I can take the little girl. The little girl, give me the jug. I can take the jug. Take it to the stream. Get the water from the stream. Feed it to the grass. Take the grass. Take it over to the cow. Feed it to the cow. Take the milk from the cow. Give it to the woman. Give back my tail, please. And the merchant says, well, first you give me an egg. If you give me an egg, I'll let you have a blue bead. And the fox says, okay. So the fox, he runs and he runs, and he comes over to a chicken. He says, chicken, if you give me an egg, I take the egg, give it to the merchant. The merchant will give me a blue bead. I take the blue bead, give it to the little girl, give me the jug. I take the jug to the stream, get the water. Take the water from the stream, give it to the grass. Take the grass, feed it to the cow. The cow, give me the milk. I can give it to the woman who'll give back my tail. Please! And the chicken says, well, first you give me some grain. You give me some grain, I'll let you have an egg. And the fox says, okay. So the fox, he runs, and he's so out of breath. And he comes over and he says, I beseech you to the farmer, please, pleading, please, if you please give me some grain. If you can give me some grain, I can take the chicken give me an egg, I can take the egg and give it to the merchant. The merchant will give me the blue bead, I can take the blue bead, give it to the little girl, give me the jug. I can take the jug, get to the stream water, feed it to the grass, give it to the cow give me the milk, I can give it to the woman who will give back my tail, please. And he turns around and shows that he has no tail on his butt. Please, he says, I beg of you. And the farmer, taking pity on him, gives him a big old bag of grain. The fox says, oh, yes, this is one fine day. Thank you. And he takes the big old bag of grain. He takes it over to the chicken, and the chicken takes it up. And satisfied, he bucks out two eggs. And he says, this is one fine day. And he runs over with the eggs, and he gives them to the merchant. The merchant, satisfied, gives him the blue beads to give the little girl. And he says, thank you, this is one fine day. And he runs over with the blue beads, and he gives them to the little girl. And the little girl, satisfied, loans him the jug. He takes the jug and says, thank you, this is one fine day. And he runs over with the jug, let water fill it up, taking a little bit in for himself. He thanks the stream, saying, this is one fine day, and he runs over, and he pours all the water onto the grass, and the grass grows up, and he snips it up, taking in the nice, fresh smell of cut grass. He says, thank you, and he takes all the grass over, and he hands it to the cow, and the cow, satisfied, says, moo, milk me. And the fox says, this is one fine day, and he fills up the milk, taking one lip for himself as he goes, and he runs over to the woman. He says to the woman, here's your milk. And the woman, satisfied, takes the tail off and sews it back onto him. And the fox says, wow, what an ordeal. And I'm going to turn it over to my husband now. We tell that story. Thank you. We tell that story because when Kim was born deaf and she was diagnosed legally blind at the age of 11, that was the first time they even knew she had a visual impairment. And they found that, I think she had less than 10 degrees of vision when they found out that she had a visual problem, because her acuity was fine from retinitis pigmentosa, but the peripheral wasn't. And we tell that story because as she went through becoming blind, we were dating at the time. So I always say she knows how good looking I am, and she says she knows what she got stuck with. But we went through that, and I'll never forget how people and services would say, oh, that's no big deal. Just go over there. So we'd go over there, and we'd fill out the paperwork or whatever, and we'd give it to him, and we'd say, what do we do? Oh, you need to take it over there. Okay, so we take it over there. Oh, well, she's going to have a vision test. And I'm like, well, she's blind. But she's got to prove she's blind. Well, her falling over didn't help. We got to have a doctor's note. Okay, so we go to the doctor. Oh, we have to have a referral to a specialist. A specialist to tell us she can't see? Okay. So you go to the specialist, we go through all this work. And by the time we actually arrive at a place where life is comfortable, we look back and we've got the water, we've been to the stream, we've had the cow, we've got the milk. And that's how it feels sometimes when you're out there meandering through all these services that are supposed to be so wonderful and easy to access. It's like going to the I always laugh with the Braille in the garage, the garages for parking, but they have no signs to tell you where to get to the elevator at. So we revel in the suffering that you've been through, and you look back on now and realize it was worth it. It was a whole lot of work, but it was worth it. Now I want to tell you another story, and this is called The Famous Violinist. There was a man who came out with his violin. He placed his music stand and his violin to his chin, and he brought the bow up, and he began to play his violin. And as he's playing his violin, he notices that his cat, who's been cleaning himself and yawning and stretching, is starting to fall asleep. So he takes something, picks it up, throws it at the cat, and the cat jumps awake. And the man then takes his violin and he begins to play again. And the cat starts to yawn and nod off to sleep. And the violinist thinks, So he takes his violin and he walks outside. And he's looking outside and he looks up into the tree and there's birds that are just chirping away. And as they're chirping away, he takes the violin, he places it to his chin, he begins to play it, and the birds are chirping as fast as they can. And as he plays more and more, the birds nod off to sleep. And he says, I got something going on here. So he takes his violin and he goes to the zoo. And as he arrives at the zoo, he's in there. He's looking around and he sees the person with the ticket guy. He says $5, and he pulls out his $5 as he pays. And they're staring at him with his violin, thinking what he's doing with a violin in the zoo. And he comes in with a nice, excited view of life, and he sees the lions and the hippos and the alligators and the monkeys and all the animals out there. And he takes his violin out, puts it to his chin, and he begins to play his violin. And as he's playing his violin, he notices that all the animals, the monkeys, the alligators, the hippopotamuses, the tigers, start to nod off to sleep. The hippo's teeth close. The zookeeper, who's out working, looks over and sees that all the animals in the zoo are asleep. And he says, what's going on here? He goes, next thing you know, media gets word of it. They're looking, they can't believe. Check out all the animals, and they look at all the animals. Everyone's talking about all the animals have gone to sleep. He ends up becoming an international success, the man who can make animals sleep with his violin. Well, someone in Spain sees this and thinks they have a great idea, so they give him a call, and they say, how would you like to come up? We'll pay you a nice chunk of change to come over here to a bullfight. And he's like, well, that would be exciting. I've never been out of the country. This will be great. So he packs his stuff up. He gets on the plane. He flies over to Spain. And as he lands, he can't wait to get out there. And when he arrives at the arena, he sees scads of people who come. And they're all cheering on the bullfighters. They have roses out that they can throw for him. And first they bring out a real matador. And the matador comes out in his regal clothing, and he tells everyone to be quiet as he gets ready. And a bull is ready to charge. They open the gate, and the bull comes running towards the matador. And the matador, in a very nonchalant way, moves to and fro, stabbing towards the bull. And everyone screams and cheers. And they're saying, I love you, and they throw roses. And he has no problem taking the bull out. And he says, thank you. And at this time, he says, we have a special guest, a special visitor, the famous violinist from America. And here he is. And he comes out somewhat awkward, a little bit nervous, gets his violin, gets his hat settled, and he says, okay, I'm ready, I'm ready. And he puts his violin to his chin, kind of shaken. He nods at him, and he says, bring him on. So the bull starts to charge, and he's ready. He comes out of the gate running, and the violinist starts playing his violin, and playing his violin, and playing faster, and playing harder, and the bull's coming faster and faster, and he's playing harder and harder. And finally, the bull hits him, and the man is out cold. He doesn't wake up until he's in the hospital. And the real matador is standing outside his hospital door going, I've got to go in and talk to this man. Finally, he enters in the matador, and he sees the violinist laying there all bruised and confused. And he says, what happened? And the matador said, we're so sorry. We're so sorry. And they said, what happened? And he said, well, the bull you got, he was deaf. And that one we often chuckle at, because sometimes our disabilities are worse for other people in situations than for the person. When Kim came home one day, I hate it when people do things like, we go into a house of a new person, and they look at Kim, and Kim will say something very nice, like, that's a pretty vase. And you know what they often will say? Oh, no. Very often we'll get, she can have it. I'm not kidding. People are so, when they think of it, they're like, if I were deaf and blind, give her the vase. Well, and Kim always chuckles. She's like, well, it would look pretty on the piano. And I'm like, no. So one day she goes with a neighbor to the grocery. And they come back from the grocery. And Kim, I see Kim saying, now, whatever you do, don't tell Wes, because he's just going to get mad. And I say, he's going to get mad. So I see this, and I walk up, what's up? And Kim's like, nothing, nothing, nothing. So the friend says, well, there was this woman, this little Asian woman, who came up to Kim, who was crying, and said, tell her I knew her back when she could hear and see. Well, Kim could never hear. So, and she hands Kim a $5 bill and a $1 bill. And she gives it, and Kim says, no, no, no. And she's like, no, no, no. And she's crying, and she gives her $6. And I ask Kim, so what did you do? And Kim says, well, I asked her for 50 because 6 wasn't going to get me much. No. The irony is, she said, no. I said, what did you do with it? And she says, well, I waited till she walked away, and we bought 2 sandwiches at Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yep, Kentucky Fried Chicken. And they were good sandwiches, even though they were given money. So we always have to be careful of how people are viewing things. And we chuckle because, like, when you go to the doctor's office, how many people, we think of doctors as professionals, right? If there's any doctors here, sorry. I work for the state, so we have an HMO, which stands for a really huge medical organization. And that means that Kim, we never see our primary care doctor. In fact, we'd never met. We had the same HMO plan for 6 years, and we had never met our primary care physician because you have to schedule your sickness like 2 months in advance. So when you're sick, you see whoever's available. So, for example, Kim would stub her toe. She broke her foot doing cartwheels one time. That's another story. But she stubs her toe. We bring her to the doctor, and what's the first question that we're asked every time? Every time, huh? Are you insured? Yeah, no. The first question we're asked every time is, how'd she go deaf and blind? And my response is, well, when she stubbed her toe, her eyeballs popped out and her ears started bleeding. Now, if you can fix that toe, everything else will fall right back into place. I do want to add that Kim has a nice love of life. Or actually, I'm not sure that she loves life because she's a daredevil. She loves experiencing the thrill of life. So Kim's gone bungee jumping. She goes skiing, skydiving. On the skydiving, we talked. And we, apparently me, the husband, agreed she would not go. Because my opinion is the only time you get out of a plane is when they're parked at the gate. Or it's going down and you have no last resort. So Kim, I get up one morning on a Saturday and it's about 7 in the morning and Kim's coming out of the shower and she's got jogging clothes on, a ponytail hair. And I said, what are you doing? And I'm about to go to a meeting because it's an all-day training session. I said, what are you doing? And she says, oh, I'm going to the Factory Outlet Mall to go shopping. And like any good husband, I said, leave the credit cards at home. I'll see you at 5. Well, I come home, and I enter in the back, and there's about 11 deaf women sitting in my living room watching TV. Well, people don't come to my house to watch TV. They come to my house to gossip with my wife. And I'm thinking, that's odd. And I look at the TV, and I see that it's an airplane. And then I realize it's Kim in an airplane. And then I realize it's Kim out of an airplane. So one of her friends is like, Wes is home. So she comes running up to me and says, hi, honey, what are you doing? I'm watching you jump. I said, let's go to the bedroom so we can talk. No. I've got friends. Let's talk here. No, let's go to the bedroom. She said, no, I've got friends. And she says to me, I thought we agreed that you weren't going to go skydiving. And she's like, well, the we of you, kind of, yeah. And I said, you told me this morning that you were going to the Factory Outlet Mall to go shopping. And she says, this darn blindness. I said, what? You must have turned around, because I said, and skydiving. Oh, chuckle, chuckle, people. We're down 2 senses. I ain't pushing around a wheelchair and spelling on her cheek. She then has the nerve to tell me, but guess what, sweetie? I saved you money. And I said, how did you save me money? And she said, well, everyone else was required to take a class first. I said, what do you mean everyone else was required to take a class first? And she said, well, you know, they weren't allowed to jump. They had to have 8 hours from that business before they could go jump. I said, well, why didn't you take the class? She said, what are they going to tell me? Watch for the red spot, you know. So she pays to have it skycammed, which means they videotape the whole jump. And Kim goes with 11 deaf women, not hearing women, deaf women. And she says, and I'm looking at the TV, and they filmed the whole process. And the owner who's talking to Kim is saying, whatever you do when we jump, keep your arms in. If you stick them out, you'll cause us to rotate. And the deaf woman is saying, he's still talking. And Kim's got her head nodding, uh-huh. And I look at this, and I realize she has no clue what he's saying. I said, why are you nodding? Well, I didn't want him to think I wasn't paying attention. And then I said, why did you bring a deaf interpreter? And she said, because they sign so much better than the hearing interpreters. So I watch the videotape, and as they're jumping out of the plane, Kim knows she's being filmed and she's a total ham, is signing, "Love y'all, this is like being a bird." And the guy behind her is grabbing at her. And Kim's going, "Quit it, get off me," you know. And she's fighting him the whole way down. They end up landing perfectly. So I always say there's this fine line between braveness and stupidity. Braveness, you do something and you live. Stupid, same activity and you die. Okay, we're going to try to wrap up a little bit quicker here. I'm going to tell you one more story about the optimist and the pessimist. There were two parents who had beautiful children. They had twins. They had a son, two twin sons, and they noticed that the first kid was constantly kicking and crying and screaming out. Very angry, very upset at all times. And the other kid was just Mr. Chuckles. He'd get gas and he'd giggle and he was all happy. At about the age of one, first boy, he tried to get up. He fell down, kicking and screaming, almost refused to learn how to walk. Cried, pointed to his butt, wanted his parents to pick him up. The other kid, he fell down, he'd be motivated, he'd jump back up again. You'd see the smile on his face, wanting more. About the age of three, they introduce a new cereal to the kids. And the first kid, he looks over at the cereal, takes a bite, spits it on the table. He says, "I hate this cereal, I ain't eating the cereal. Where's my old cereal? I like the old cereal, I don't like new stuff." And the other kid looks at it and says, "This is too cool. They got different toys in this cereal. This is another choice. I love it." About age five comes and tryout for T-ball comes. First boy gets up, he swings, totally misses the ball. And the coach says, "You ain't making the team this year." And the boy says, "I hate T-ball, I hate you, and I ain't ever playing this sport." Other boy gets up, he swings, misses the ball. Coach says, "You ain't making it this year, you can't hit a ball." And the boy says, "I'm going to practice my butt off, and next year I'm going to be back and be the best T-ball player you got. I'm going to be an all-star." By about the age of eight, they're working at home on homework. First kid arrives home, he says, "I hate school." He throws his book. "I hate the principal. I hate the school. I hate the teachers. I ain't learning this crap. Homework. They're giving us homework." Second boy comes home and says, "Mom, Dad, you're never going to believe this. At school today, they've got this new stuff in science. I need some help. Check this out. This principal, I'm going to be just like him. The teachers, they're giving you all this new information. It is far out." About the age of 10, the parents are really concerned. They say, "What are we going to do with our kids?" And they agree for a birthday, they're going to try an experiment. So the parents buy every gift you could want, every expensive, fancy gift. They get motorcycles, they get games, they get computers, they get Nintendo. You name it, they wrapped it up and they put it inside a room and they placed the negative boy in there. In the other room, they filled it with horse manure and they put the positive boy in there. With both kids in the rooms, the parents sat back and waited. They looked at each other and said, "How's this going to turn out?" And they're waiting kind of nervously, thinking, "What's going on in those rooms?" And finally, after time passes, they open up the door with the gifts and the negative kid, and he's got every gift open. He's laying on the floor, feigning death. "What's the gifts for? Am I dying? Am I sick? What's the catch?" And they're like, "Oy vey." And they open the other door, and that boy's shoveling as hard as he can with a grin. He says, "With all this horse manure, there's a horse here, and I'm going to find it." That story, this is Wes now, that story reminds me of Kim. We used to say 850, because we used to keep these tallies. I would say we now know over about 1,000 deafblind people. We leave at 2 o'clock this morning, and we flew in last night from another conference to go to the AADB, the American Association for the Deaf and Blind Conference. It's an international conference, mainly the American, but they come from Japan and all over various countries. And the thing that makes me think about with that story is that those people that are successful or that are happy because they decide to be happy. And I meet people who I wouldn't even want to be around. Sometimes it's me. And Kim comes out and comes up with the most off-the-wall stuff. Someone spills a drink, and she's like, "Well, that's cool. How much water went here?" And I see a spilled drink, and I'm like, "Dog it, we gotta clean that up again." So her take on life is that it's all good. And how you deal with all of that, and how you perceive yourself, and how you think about things is what makes life good. And I just think it's neat that if you're out there and you're filled, you see horse manure, look for the horse. It's got to be there somewhere. Okay? We're going to take 1 second, and hopefully there won't be anything, but often during conferences, someone has a really burning question they want to ask that we didn't answer. So if you have something you want to ask, we'll answer like a few questions.
We don't have a wireless.
It's okay. I'll be happy to repeat the question.
You have to repeat it.
Sure.
I have one.
Okay.
I want you all to tell the story about when you met your twin. Katie didn't know.
Ooh, loud.
Kim and Wes, I want y'all to share the story about when your oldest daughter didn't or thought that Kim didn't know their names and the Kool-Aid and the whole issue surrounding that. I just think that's one of the neatest stories y'all have to tell.
Kim said, you tell that story, Wes, because it's about speech. Okay. Around 2.5, 3 years old is when our kids started to become aware that there was a little bit difference between Kim and what we do and then what's happening out in the community. And about 2.5 or 3, maybe more to 3.5, my daughter comes to me one day crying and says, Mama doesn't know my name. And when my daughter cries, she loses her speech. So actually she's mouthing this with tears and signing. And I look at her and I'm like, what are you talking about? Mama knows your name. Mama names you. She said, no. She said, come. And I was like, oh, okay. Deaf speech. Kim doesn't talk. I mean, she has speech, but she has what we call deaf speech. She was born deaf. So her speech sounds like a deaf person because she's never heard speech. So Kim has a unique way of saying all of our names. So I go and get Kim, who was in our bathroom, and we end up having the whole family. We've got this baby on the floor and my daughter, who's 3-ish, and we're sitting in the restroom on the floor. Because that's where you do, wherever you're at, do the intervention there. And Kim and I sit down and I said, what's KV's name? We call her KV. Your name is Kimberly Vivian, but we call her KV in signs. And I said, what's your name? And Kim signs KV and then finger spells Kimberly Vivian Smith. And I look at my daughter and I says, is that your name? And she's like, yes, but she didn't say that. And I said, okay, that's your name. And I asked Kim, what's my name? And Kim signs my name and signs my son's name and signs my daughter's name. I mean, yeah, all of our names. And I said, now say the name. And Kim says, and I'll let her do this.
Good.
That was KV.
Good.
Wiz. That's me, Wes. I'll always be Wiz.
Say, ooh.
That's Junior. Okay? So I said, that's Mama's special way of saying your names. Mama will always say your names that way. She knows your name. She named you, girl. And I said, no matter how old you get, when you hear Kav, that's Mama's special way of saying your name. And she was like, okay. And she came to terms with it. And she got it. And she said, okay, can I go watch this movie? I said, sure. So she goes and watches the movie. Here's where it goes to that book of answers we don't have. I don't know if that was the right answer. I didn't know what to do. So about 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, her little friend comes over, and her friend's about 2 years older, and they start negotiating, and they decide that they want Kool-Aid. And they want red Kool-Aid, not this purple Kool-Aid. So KV gets up, walks over to Kim, and she signs, we want Kool-Aid. We want the red Kool-Aid. Now, not that purple stuff, so don't you make the mistake of that purple, because I don't like the purple, and she don't like the purple. We agreed, red. And Kim's like, okay, and all of our Kool-Aid is railed and labeled and ready to go, because we got to have it accessible for Kim for the kids. Kim gets out the Kool-Aid, makes it, and KV goes back and she's playing with her friend, and all of a sudden I hear Kim yell, Kav, calling her out. And my daughter gets up as proud as can be and turns to her friend and says, that's my mama's way of saying my name. It's special and it'll always be special. And she comes back in. So there's a lot of positive things. We had one more question, a person with their hand up, a young lady. Yep. She's wondering if we're going to the Deaf Blind Conference in San Diego. We leave here at 2 o'clock in the morning tonight. We'll see you there. Great. She's going to San Diego. Actually, Kim's going there. I'm going to New York. So you can see Kim there. Any other questions that y'all really wanted answered in the far back? Uh-huh.
What, Kim,
okay, can I travel alone? Yes. I do travel alone. for like airplanes and stuff. I have to have someone meet me there. But what Wes will do is he'll go up to the gate and he'll explain where I'm getting off and whatnot. And then I'll have to wait for one of the agents to come with me and get me onto the plane. If they need to communicate with me, then, and they don't know sign, then we do what we call palm printing. So they just print the letters on the hand. So Wes would, like, right now I'm printing on her hand the letter H and drawing it out, E-L-L-O, and Kim just said hello. So they can palm print on her hand, and then she can write back. So if they wanted to ask me if I want coffee or whatnot, and I kind of know that's coming, so I'm prepared, but they'll palm print on my hand, and it's pretty easy. I do a lot of traveling and a lot of traveling alone, and I've been traveling, and I've been blind now for about 16, totally blind for about 16 years, so I'm pretty independent on that. Other questions? With the monocle, with your hand up, that you just turned around and looked backwards? Yeah. How do you what? What did she say? How do we have arguments? Oy vey. Yeah. Kim says, how do we argue? That is a good question. Very fast. You want to answer that one, Wes? You want me to answer it? I want to see your answer. Okay. This is Kim talking. How we have arguments if we have a disagreement or over something silly, something stupid usually, something that's very large sometimes. I usually say what I want to say and then won't put my hands on Wes. And Wes usually follows me around and he comes behind me and he'll start drawing letters on my back. And I'll start doing a dance to get away from him and eventually we'll have to make physical contact to talk. But yeah, okay, that's about right. It infuriates me because what she'll do, we live in a really large house and we'll get mad at each other, so she'll walk all the way to the bedroom and she'll yell, Wes! And I say, what? The only choice is to get up and walk back there. I think that's why God gave us kids. Go see what your mama wants. Okay, the lady standing up, who just stood up. Okay, you have a toddler, and when you can't hear, how do you track the kid? How do you know where the kids are and what they're doing? Okay, I live in a home where I have the wooden type floors, so I feel a lot of the movement. And also, I have a very acute sense of smell. So I can literally smell my kid's sweat. The scent for me is there, and I can tell by the movement and the scent almost exactly where they're at all times. And my husband and my kids are almost afraid of it. If Wes goes out of town for training or something, my kids tend to be pretty close. My daughter is much more mature. My son is the little hellion. He's a little miscreant, and he's a beast. But he's my beast. The kids, this is Wes talking, our kids are actually pretty wonderful about staying. The irony is when I first started leaving, I used to leave the house and then come back and watch in the window. Because I wanted to see what the kids were doing. And the irony is that our kids would actually start to come and they would stay much closer to Kim the whole time I'm gone. And the second I would arrive, they'd distance themselves a little bit more. So our kids kind of modified it for themselves. They're not teenagers yet, so heaven help us and y'all pray for us. But so far, we haven't had any problems. Kim could tell me, this is really odd, Kim could tell me if our son or daughter had a wet diaper. She would be standing there and she'd go, oh, you need to go change Junior. And I'm like, well, first, why do I have to change him? And she'd say, he's wet. I said, no, he's not. She said, yes, he is. No, he's not. And I'd like finally stick my finger in there and go, yeah, he is wet. But she's got this amazing sense of smell. So, one more question we're only allowed. Back here. Whoever yelled back here, we'll give it to you. Gosh, that's a good question. A specific experience? I think I just have to say that naturally you got to work on it. When things go wrong, I get just as upset as everybody else, but I try to pull something else out of it. And I try to, ironically, to tell myself I'm helping others. Wes help? I can't help you answer that question. Yeah, Kim. I remember when Kim lost her total vision at the very end, and it was a hard process to go through. And I remember the first time I learned Braille first. Kim and I were dating, and Kim said, "I refuse to learn Braille, and I'm not using that dang cane because people will think I'm blind." Kim just said it was very embarrassing. And I remember at one point in our relationship where I said I had learned Braille because I thought that you had to know Braille if you were blind. And if you're deaf and blind, you do. If you're just blind, I learned that many blind people don't learn Braille. But that would close off every bit of communication for Kim on telephones because she can't do voice synthesizers. She can't do anything auditory or visual. So I remember telling her that at one point, "Well, I guess we're not going to be able to stay together because you're not very bright if you can't read. You're kind of illiterate." And about a week later, Kim comes in and she's reading grade 2 at 100 miles an hour. Yeah. And then she says, and I challenged him, and she started leaving me these long notes. And I'd say, "What does it say?" "Well, I guess you're not be very bright, are you?" I think that's about it. Thank you all so much. Kim says thank you so much for your time. And I hope all of y'all have a safe trip home, Kim says, that all of your flights are safe and no one has any problems at the airport. We had a wonderful time tonight.
Thank you very, very much. Kim and Wes. I hope that all of our friends around the world listening on ACB Radio enjoyed this as much as I did, and I hope you enjoyed it too. See, I told you we're going to be glad you came. Pennsylvania and the host committee have certainly been proud to help you make this a great week. We now have one or two more things to do to wrap this up tonight. Got a couple of things to do. First of all, that song is going to come up here in just about the...
We're a group that has a vision with pride and dignity, looking toward a brighter future where there's true equality. Optimistic and determined to direct our destiny. Come and join us, change the world of ACB.
Let one verse go by here now, if you know it.
Come in different packages and personalities, with many skills and talents but few opportunities. Just take an honest look at jobs that blind folks really do. Teachers, lawyers, writers, business owners, just to name a few. We're a group that has a vision,
come on,
with pride and dignity, looking toward a brighter future where there's true equality. Optimistic and determined to direct our destiny. Come and join us, change the world with ACB. ACB. We believe that there is more to life than working 9 to 5. You've got to laugh and have some fun to really feel alive. And when it comes to love and friendship, we can give so very much. We may be out of sight, but we're by no means out of touch. Hey, we're a group that has a vision, with pride and dignity, looking toward a brighter future where there's true equality. Optimistic and determined to direct our destiny. Come and join us, change the world with ACB. You've got to open up a box to be sure of what's inside. So don't label us as helpless before giving us a try. We're not asking for a handout, we don't want your sympathy. All we want is just a chance to prove our capabilities. We're a group that has a vision, with pride and dignity, looking toward a brighter future where there's true equality. Optimistic and determined to direct our destiny. Come and join us, change the world with ACB. ACB. We're a group that has a vision, with pride and dignity.
Come on, everybody.
Looking toward a brighter future where there's true equality. Optimistic and determined to direct our destiny. Come join us, change the world with ACB. Hey, we're a group that has a vision with pride and dignity. Looking toward a brighter future where there's true equality. Optimistic and determined to direct our destiny. Come and join us, change the world with ACB. Come and join us, change the world with ACB.
I couldn't cut it. My original plan was to only play part of it, but I couldn't help it. I just had to let it all go. Well, it's time to switch the quilt. As you know, the ACB quilt's been traveling the past couple of years, and it's going to be traveling again. To tell us about where it's going and a little bit about this quilt, here's Brenda Dillon.
First of all, I want to thank those of you who faithfully supported the effort of buying your tickets so that your affiliate might be the one to take the quilt home for the year. If you are the lucky person and your ticket's drawn, your affiliate will have possession of the quilt from now until next year's convention. You will showcase this at any exciting opportunity you have, whether it be your state convention, at your school for the blind, any opportunity to show it to dignitaries in your state, and you'll make pictures, and if it gets in the newspaper, you'll clip those, and we have a scrapbook that you'll keep throughout the year. And this is a real exciting history. By the way, the song, our ACB song, is right in the middle of that quilt. So without further ado, this is my beautiful evening bag. For those of you who can't see, it's a big old plastic bag full of all your chances. And so I'm going to draw a winning ticket.
And we have the quilt. We have the quilt up here, so if the winner is here, we're going to have you come up here and pick up this quilt tonight because we don't want to try to track you down later.
All right, here we go.
All right, Brenda.
We're unfolding the paper. Oops, we got two. Can't have two. Here we go. And the winner is Fred Scheigert from Florida. Woo!
Is Fred here?
If he's not, anyone from the Florida Council can come up and take
it. If he is not here, anybody from the Florida Council, let's get Mr. Edwards up here to take this quilt. Come on up, Fred.
He's coming up here. He's coming.
Here comes Paul. Oh, here comes Fred. Oh, he doesn't look like Paul.
There's your quilt.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations, Fred.
Thank you.
You're going to be showing off this quilt next year in Birmingham.
Oh, yeah, right.
He didn't know it, but he is now. Congratulations, Fred.
Thank you.
Now, we told you we had a couple of things to give away yet. Madam Door Prize has a couple of things here, and we have the sweepstakes to go. What do you have, Madam Door Prize?
$50 from Illinois Council of the Blind.
Joe Taglis from Honolulu? Not here.
Paul McGann from Pittsburgh, PA.
Paul McGann from Pittsburgh. Heck, half those guys were here for the day.
Kathy Blackburn, Austin, Texas.
Kathy Blackburn, Austin, Texas. Gone, okay.
I'll just take it.
She's gone.
Shirley Roberts from Dayton, Ohio.
Shirley Roberts from Dayton, Ohio.
Is she here?
Is she here? Okay, she's here. All right.
So next. Oh, sorry.
We're ready for another one.
$25, Alaska Independent Blind.
$25 from the Alaska Independent Blind.
Catherine Skivers from California.
And we know she's here. Congratulations, Catherine.
She's put more than $25 into what she's worked on this year, so she can get a little bit back. Got more?
Yeah, sure. $25 from RSVA.
Randolph Shepherd Vendors, $25.
Mark Reichert from Silver Springs, Maryland.
Oh, it's too bad. Mark's not here.
Oh, no.
Okay, who's next?
Dan Dillon from Tennessee.
All right, Dan. We know Dan is here. Brenda's pretty happy. Give it to Brenda.
We got anything else we're going for?
All right, Kelly Weiss from Santa Monica, California. Is Kelly here? No? Okay. I'm pulling a name out. These are all stuck together. All right. Adrian Delaney from Milwaukee, from Virginia, yeah, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. DeBlay, is she here? They here? He?
Is Adrian here?
He's here. Okay, good. Okay, we have one more door.
Ready? $50 from the Philadelphia Area Chapter, Pennsylvania Council of the Blind.
Hey, that's my chapter. All right.
Victoria Vaughan, V-A-U-G-H-A-N from Pittsburgh.
Victoria? Nope, she's not here.
They got a lot of them people in here.
M-A-R, Marjorina Atkins from Richmond, Virginia?
No.
Terry Mansfield from Pittsburgh, PA?
I'm going to pull several this time.
Ronald Whaley from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma? Not. Okay. Keith Stiebler from Pittsburgh?
He's not here. He was playing the piano the other morning, though.
Elaine Welch from Newton, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, that's, she's not here either.
What? Can I just...
Yeah. She's here?
Is that our winner?
We got a winner. All right, we had a winner. Thank you.
She's not the $50 winner.
No, keep going. I thought we had the winner.
All right. Claire Michaels from Allentown, PA.
Claire's not here.
I am.
We're shaking.
Linda Sherwood from Floresville, Maryland. Okay. Ethel Siegel from Philadelphia.
Are you here, Ethel? Oh, too bad.
Oh, boy. Paula Leff from Pittsburgh. Is there anybody here besides Pennsylvania people? I'm trying. Sandra Wilbur, Cincinnati, Ohio. Katie Lear from Fort something, Orange, Florida. Joseph Lynch, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Barbara Lizwinski from Cincinnati. All right, Cynthia Towers is going to draw. See, she can have some luck at getting a winner. She's won, so.
Yeah, Jolene Ferguson.
Jolene Ferguson from Washington. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we have a couple of more quick things to do. I want to get Melanie Brunson to come up here right now because we are about to give away something very, very nice. Yeah. Yeah. And Mr. Jonathan Mosen is cheering over there because he knows what it is. It's a pack of Oscar Mayer wieners. All week long, I've been sitting next to him at the soundboard, and Jonathan has been singing, "I love to be an Oscar Mayer wiener."
I don't quite know why. But he really has been doing that. I know, he says, because I'm a silly sausage. Well, here comes Melanie. And now, ladies and gentlemen, what do we got? Here's Melanie Brunson, our governmental affairs director.
Thank you, Jay. And thanks to everybody for letting me do this. As some of you might remember, last year I was very fortunate to receive the voice note that Pulse Data gave away from among the entries that were received by from the people who attended their workshops. And Marlena Lieberg called me a few weeks ago and said that she was very sorry that she wasn't going to be able to be at the banquet herself, and she has the misfortune of having to travel to England. So that was exactly my reaction. But I didn't feel too bad, because what she asked me was if I would be willing to present the voice note to this year's winner. And because I got so excited about having to receive it last year, I thought it would be really fun to be able to present this year's winner. And so, although I'm not Marlena Lieberg, I am very privileged to be able to have the opportunity to present this year's winner for Pulse Data. And I just want to say that I hope that this person is as excited as I was to be able to receive it. When I tell you who this person is, I would like to ask the person to come to the podium, because I have a huge box that I am going to give to you. And I want you to be able to have the pleasure of in getting at its contents just as quickly as possible. So without any further ado, let me tell you who this year's winner of the voice note from Pulse Data Humanware is. And that person goes by the name of Frank Cuta.
Frank, will you make your way up here, please?
Are you sure he's here?
No. I would assume she had found out from him, but...
Okay, Frank is making his way up here.
Okay.
Come right over here, Frank. Frank's coming up. I'm going to get out of the way. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Melanie is being approached by Frank. Ken is taking a picture. Frank is saying, I wish Marvelena were here, but we're glad you are, Melanie. Melanie is now presenting the Braille note to Frank. Voice note, sorry.
Thank you very much.
You have anything to say, Frank?
I thought very positively about this, and I thought, this is mine.
Well, that's about as a positive statement as I can get. I'll tell you what. Let me go in front of you, Frank, okay? Congratulations to Frank Cuta for winning this year's voice note. Will Charlie Crawford please make his way up to the podium, please? Charlie, will you please make your way up to the podium? For just this moment, I'd like to talk with a man who has now started to work with Pulse Data. I think he might have a few comments to make really quickly. Mr. Mosen, congratulations for joining Pulse Data, and do you have anything to say about that award tonight?
The Mosen explosion is fun. The Mosen explosion is fun. Congratulations, Frank. And can I just say this is the last time I'll talk to an ACB convention, probably. So I'd like to say a couple of things. Firstly, support for ACB Radio comes with the proud support of thejoyboys.com. And it's very important that you put the V in front, because if you go to thejoyboys.com site, you'll go blind. I would also like to you'll notice they've really kept me under wraps this week, and that's why it's been such a successful convention. But I would like to just say that I love you, ACB. It's been a real fun 3.5 years, and I have sat through every minute of every general session for the last 4 conventions, and I deserve a break now. Yeah. And just before I go and vanish into obscurity, apart from asking you to please buy lots of Braille notes to keep my family, to prove that I have been listening attentively, I want to see if you can work out who this is. Now, I have 3 announcements. Number 1, Jonathan Mosen will caucus in the bar. Bye-bye.
That's his imitation of Cynthia. The other song that he's been singing for the past week is the Almond Joy Has Nuts, Mounds Don't. I haven't figured that one out either. Well, now, here's Mr. Charlie Crawford, ACB Executive Director.
Well, good evening, ACB. And I want to thank Elvis for introducing me.
Thank you very much.
We needed video description during the showcase, though, because I don't know if you swiveled those hips, Jay, when you did that song. Anyway, actually, I have a very short question for people tonight. Notice I didn't say point of order or anything like that. And the question is, who in this room knows the significance of July 27th, 1993?
I do.
I have a couple of hints. Listen closely. American Council of the Blind. Another hint. Every time that you receive one of those Braille Forum cassettes or diskettes or Braille Forums in any form, a pair of hands that works at the national office had a lot to do with that. Another hint, somebody knows the name and address of every person in this organization, because it's her responsibility every day to make sure that information's up and straight. God, these people are smart. It only took 3 hints. I want to proudly present to Ms. Sharon Lovering, who I tricked into coming up here by saying, I'm blind and I can't find the microphone, with this wonderful 10-year service pin from the American Council of Blind. Thank you, Liz. Go for it.
I knew I shouldn't have cut my fingernails.
That's it?
No, I'm trying to pin it on.
Oh, okay.
Hey, my wife is here.
10 years. I can't believe it. Can I have some coffee? It's been a wonderful, wild, like a roller coaster, 10 years. It's been a great convention, but I think we're all ready to go home. So thank you, and remember, if you're moving, please let me know.
Congratulations, Sharon. Sharon's really been a wonderful person in that office. There's a lot of good people who are working down there, and Sharon's one of them that has really made a difference for us. Well, it's time now for that sweepstakes winner. And Mr. James Olson is up here. He's got a little blue bag filled with names.
Chris.
And Mr. Chris Gray is going to pull out that name. This is the sweepstakes winner. There's the lucky one. Cindy Flurgerman from Los Angeles. Cindy has just won $500. And she's making her way up here now. We have it in a great big suitcase in $1 bills. But fortunately, Cindy, it does have a handle. You'll be able to pull it to the airport. So it won't be a problem. Here she comes. Making your way up here now. Cindy, I just had a quick question. When you thought about filling out the sweepstakes, did you ever think you might win something like this?
Oh, absolutely not. No, this is my hometown, Pittsburgh. I grew up here. My main name was Kudis. If anybody's in the audience that I don't know is here from my hometown. I come back every year. It's always wonderful to be back here. And I just expected that the highlight for me would be seeing my family here and coming to this convention. And I never dreamed I would be a winner of this prize. And I'm very grateful to this organization, which I care a lot about, to have received this. But I would have been happy to be here either way. Thank you very much.
Congratulations, Cindy. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're coming to the end of our banquet this evening. And what I want to say before we wrap up as we conclude our proceedings here at the ACB convention, I'd like to meet with the members of the host committee who are here with us tonight up here at the head table before you all leave to go home. But I would like to publicly thank the members of the host committee who did such a fabulous job to make this work. We have been very proud of serving you here in Pittsburgh. While we know there's been quite a bit of expense, we know that a lot of you have incurred additional expenses for coming here. We hope that you had a wonderful time and the people of Pittsburgh made you feel welcome. And we want to say to you folks in Birmingham, those of you on the host committee there, we have notes, we have information, we'll help you all we can, and we will join you next year in Birmingham, Alabama.
A&R photographer would like to meet with the board and the board of publications. Over to the right of the podium as you face the stage. Good night, everybody. To the left of the podium as you face the stage. To the left of the podium as you face the stage. Thank you, everybody, and God bless you all. Good night.